Welcome to season 13 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is all things residential. We are talking about ladies who were involved in residential projects.
As always, we're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
Today, we are continuing our 3-for-1 special. We are still learning about Masako Yahashi, Nobuko Nakahara, and Hatsue Yamada, who were among the first female architects in Japan, and they owned a firm together which did many housing projects.
I still can't believe we almost tried to tell 3 stories in one episode.
A girl's gotta try.
But I'm glad that we are back.
Yeah. I'm Nurjani Rivas, getting back into books in Houston, Texas.
Hey there, and I'm Jessica Rogers, getting back to my plant babies in Miami, Florida.
I'm Lizzie Rahr, working on a baby quilt in San Francisco.
Cute. Who's the baby?
For a friend who just had a baby.
Nice. Okay, last week we covered a lot of ground into Masako Yahashi and Nobuko Nakahara's life.
Yes. So for a quick refresher, Masako, she was born on July 11th, 1928 in Hokkaido, Japan. We have no idea about her life growing up at all. So we fast forward to when she was around 23 years old and graduated from Japan Women's University. That same year, she finished her first project. It was a house called the Mr. O Residence, and it was in Tokyo. In 1955, she started designing her own home in Koshikawa with another architect who just so happened to be her husband, Shoji Hayashi. In 1958, she started her own architecture firm with Nobuko Nakahara and Hatsue Yamada.
Nobuko Nakahara was born on January 5th, 1929, in Saitama, Japan. Unfortunately, we could say Nobuko grew up in darkness. Because of raid regulations, houses had to keep the lights off at night during World War II, and they were allowed to have light in only one room. At night, Nobuko and her family would use the room with the light to get together and read. This experience impacted Nobuko's approach to design. She said that after the war, she felt free and felt how bright the world was. She paid special attention to light and shadow in her future work. She studied architecture at the Musashi Institute of Technology, and eventually she became the third woman architect in Japan.
Now, Nurjani still owes us details on Hatsue Yamada's origins and life.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten.
Salty much?
I am salty.
Yeah, because we were expecting 3, and we've only known the lives of 2. But what she did share was how Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue met. In the 1950s, there were very few women studying or practicing architecture in Japan. 29 of them got together and decided to start an association. On September 14th, 1953, the Women Architects Association was born. It was called Podoku. It stands for Thought, Discussion, and Creation, which the ladies wanted to be the main driver of the association. It also stemmed for this language called Esperanto. Look it up. Sounds cool. Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue were all part of those 29 founding members. In time, the 3 of them began working on a design for the Women's Association of Yokohama City. Even though the project was not built, this was the catalyst for these ladies. They established the firm Hayashi, Yamada, and Nakahara Architectural Design Circle in 1958.
On our last episode, we shared a lot of their projects and discussed a few together. They were very collaborative, and the majority of their work was residential.
Some of their residential projects that garnered good press through the years are the Easy Order System Villa in Nasu, housing for the Japan Women's University in Karuizawa, and the Hillside Complex in Yokohama, Kanagawa. Most of these were published in magazines. They be important, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. These ladies be doing important work.
Mm-hmm.
The work they did together, they would sign it together. It sounds like it was a true collaboration.
I love that.
Oh, yes, I love it.
Throughout their career, they thought about lifestyle changes in Japan after the war and how that translated to home design. For example, they reflected on how people often wanted tea ceremony rooms in their houses, not because they needed it or even used it for a ceremony, but because it was a display of apparent wealth. They thought about the underused, undefined spaces of homes.
I can see how there would be a shift in residential design during that time. Post-war had a lot of changes for housing. But it's also just interesting, the tea ceremony room. I think today there's a lot of talk too of like, do people want a formal living room or a formal dining room? Or do you just have one eating? Like, it's kind of a similar type of thing, right?
Well, I was just thinking about today, right? Like the post-coronavirus pandemic where everyone had to work from home. Now, like to your point, there's the post-formal living, dining, whatever, but now at-home offices because a lot of people are working from home.
Yeah, way bigger thing. Like having workspaces at home.
Right. And it's also like, I think, I mean, the home office has never been like not a thing. But now how do you do it when it's like a couple? Do they work in the same office? How do you coordinate or like design a house to have two designated office spaces? So the household is just evolving. So it's understandable even back then when societal or world life happens and how things like the home have to change. Nowadays, too, with like the multi-generational living has been a trend, too. So like the rise of like the mother-in-law suite or even just housing.
ADUs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too, because like it's so hard to find places to live that now existing households are like, okay, yeah, we need to add a bedroom for our adult child that can't buy a house. It's interesting. This is a very apropos season, might I say, for us to have these discussions in, just because of where we are in the world. So go us. Sorry.
Well, even though they were doing all this great work under the name of the firm, they also had their own personal side hustles. They allowed themselves to explore and pursue their own projects and endeavors.
Well, of course. I mean, like we said last week, we know they're not just doing one thing.
Yeah. Multiple streams of income. Also, like, not just our this season, or it's just in our ladies' natures, you know?
Yeah.
100 plus episodes in, our ladies, they're just multi-hyphenated, okay? But I do like that in this scenario, I like that they had their group thing and then they did their own thing.
Speaking of, if y'all started your own individual podcast without me, what would it be about?
Like specifically a podcast? No idea.
Maybe quilting.
That's so niche.
I guess. I don't know what I have to say about quilting, though. I like it.
Maybe you record yourself quilting and then just talking about your day-to-day. Like, I'm quilting this thing.
Over the sound of the sewing machine? Like,
you know how meditative that might be? You just hear... So here's your story.
Isn't that a thing? It has a name.
ASMR.
Yeah, but you can't see it. You just hear it. So that might be weird. I don't know.
What about you, Jessica?
Okay. I don't know if I... Well, I guess I haven't talked to you guys about it, but I've thought about it briefly of doing a podcast, like, separate. But, and it would have to probably be about architecture because that's pretty much my life. Or like Beyonce fanfare. But it wouldn't be tied to like history. Maybe more of like a current event thing, like of what's happened. I don't know. This is why I haven't done it because I haven't ironed out the details. And it's good when you have people to work with. And and if I want to do it by myself, I can't hold myself accountable for it.
Well, if you change your mind, let us know. We'll support you.
What about you, Nurjiti?
Oh, yeah. What about you?
I mean, I started the podcast I wanted to.
Yeah, but we're talking about other individual projects.
Side hustles, yeah.
Yeah, becoming more multi-hyphenated because, you know, we have all the time in the world to do more things.
Maybe it would be about fostering dogs, like helping people that are thinking about fostering and what resources they could reach out to, and then have different guests that are fosters and their experiences.
That sounds lovely.
That's what I have in my brain right now because we've been fostering this month.
Oh.
And I've become passionate about it.
I mean, they don't call it a passion project for nothing.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking how Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue did their thing together, but also did their separate things. Let's talk about their separate things. And I just love how they supported each other.
Mm.
Okay. So in 1963, Nobuko was working in Paris for a bit. There, she met episode 94 lady Solange.
Oh.
They got to talking, and Nobuko went on to be one of the founding members of the International Union of Women Architects, aka UIFA. At one point, she was the vice president of this union. She was also the president of the group's Japan chapter.
I'm loving this episode crossover. Woo!
Me too. That is so cool.
In the 1970s, Nobuko had some solo noteworthy housing projects, including the K Building, Y Residence, M Villa, and a house in Kaikyo.
Ooh. Are there photos?
TBD.
Mm. Also, I'm so intrigued by all of the names being letters of these houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, shout Me out too. To Eileen Gray.
With yeah. like. But it's like, Mr. F.
I agree. I was too like, what is the house in Kaiko? House K.
Yeah.
In 1976, she participated in the International Congress of Women Architects, where they focused on the crisis of identity in architecture in Tehran. And a decade later, in 1988, while she was president of the UIFA Japan, she organized the 12th UIFA Congress, which was hosted in Tokyo. That one focused on people, architecture, and cities in an era of environmental coexistence.
I keep wanting to read that acronym as UEFA, but it's like, that's the soccer.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's like, why did you misspell FIFA? But okay.
Right, I know. It sounds like she was really involved in promoting women in the profession, which I love.
Yes, agreed. And her topic is so apropos to what she had been doing before with the other girls. So cool.
At some point, she served on the board of the International Archive of Women in Architecture at Virginia Tech.
Shut up.
What?
Stop.
So many connections.
Talk about a throwback, listeners. You guys should remember this, besides the fact that this is a resource that we use for our show, the International Archive of Women in Architecture. But our first lady, episode one, Milka Bliznikov, started the archive, the IAWA.
That's right. Oh, and Nobuko didn't stop at architect and organization runner. No, 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 no. She also added professor to her resume. She taught at Kasei Gakuin University in Tokyo from 1985 to 1999.
Obviously, gotta add that to the resume.
Yeah, add that other stream of income. Also, I mean, I know that we're no spring chickens, but to me, 1999 just seems like not that long ago.
I mean, we were alive, so.
I know. So we were alive at the same time as Nobuko.
I know. She's not that old.
Yeah.
While Nobuko was keeping her free time non-existent, Masako was keeping busy writing. Some of her published books are House Design in Today's Japan, 1969, My Architectural Method, excerpts from a lecture dialogue between architect couples, Chronological Diagram of Works. That was published in 1979. And World Architecture Designs 18. House with a Gallery, published in 1984. Just to name a few.
Yeah, just a few books, you know.
Yeah, casually.
Uh-huh.
I want to read all of these, but especially My Architectural Method.
Yeah.
The dialogue between architect couples. Now that would have been a book for our couple season.
True.
Yeah.
And House with a Gallery. I love a gallery, and we like houses.
And actually, Masako was also out there winning awards, serving in organizations, getting her academia on, doing all the things too.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first woman to win a Japan Institute of Architects Award in 1981. they celebrated her work in housing design. And in 1985, she became an honorary member of the American Institute of Architects.
Not surprised she was also multitasking, but very glad to hear that she's also being recognized for her work.
Yeah, girl. Right when she's alive to smell her flowers. It's beautiful.
A year later, in 1986, she won the Isoya Yoshida Award.
Okay, so that's pretty cool, and it's an incredible honor. So listeners, think of this award as an equivalent to the gold medal from the AIA. But this award is given by the Japan Art Academy.
Ooh, wow.
Legit.
Yeah, that's really cool. Also, the 24th Congress of the International Union of Architects, hosted in Tokyo in 2011, featured her work as one of the pioneering women in architecture.
That's right, it did.
Mm-hmm.
She was a part-time professor at the University of Tokyo's architecture department, and she served as director of the Japan Institute of Architects from 1987 to 1989.
What didn't these ladies do? I mean,
they just didn't become movie stars or have a cookbook, but they did like everything else.
I know. I love how involved Nobuko and Masako were throughout their career, and I can imagine how they supported each other every step of the way, like the three of us do.
Oh, that's such a nice comparison.
We're the three best friends that everyone could have. Oh, however the song goes from that movie.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
Well, Masako passed away on January 9th, 2001. After that, almost half a century since they began working together, Nobuko and Hatsue decided to close their firm. All for one and one for all.
Wow, they kept that firm for a long time. But I can see how it would be hard to keep it going once one of them passed away. Masako really did all the things. And also, wasn't super old. She was 73 when she died, but it sounds like she still had such a full life and career.
Yeah, she was able to do a lot. Like, we kept joking about it, but she was an architect. She published books, a professor, led organizations, and was considered a pioneer in her own right. I like the respect that they had for each other to close the firm after Masako passed away. I mean, a tidbit that was mentioned, they signed their drawings together. So it just wouldn't be the same with the missing signature. It's lovely.
A year later, Nobuko's work was showcased in Women and Architecture, Creating Better Housing in Cities, Towns for Supporting Both Work and Family Life at the Center for Advancement of Working Women in Tokyo.
Again, I really like the recognition they're getting.
Yes, and that they're able to see their recognition while they're alive, to feel that they're being seen. I also like the idea that they are honored as a group together, but they're also honored as the individuals that they were too. I think that's a testament to how unique and how special all of them were.
That's really beautiful, Jessica.
We're good on our own, but we're stronger together, and we get recognized for those two things.
When I looked for the Center for Advancement of Working Women, I couldn't find it. I found the National Women's Education Center of Japan, so I'm not sure if it was a mistranslation or something like that in the research that I was reading. But anyway, whatever it's called, it sounds like an interesting organization with a great mission.
It really does.
Maybe the name changed, and it's like the same thing.
Maybe.
Could be. Nobuko passed away on July 5th, 2008. In 2010, the Virginia Center for Architecture in Richmond put together the exhibit Glass Ceilings, highlights from the International Archive of Women Architects. Nobuko's work, along with others, was featured.
Amazing. They both had such full careers. I know I've said it a lot already, but I'm just really glad people saw and appreciated the work that they were doing.
Agreed. And y'all, this is 2008 and 2010. Like, we already knew that our lives overlapped a little bit with theirs. But like in 2008, we were about to enter college, not to date us, but we were. And I'm also sure that there has to be photos somewhere about this exhibition. I am still in shock that it was in 2010.
Yeah, I should reach out to the IAWA because I'm pretty sure that they were, I mean, they were involved in it. So they should have pictures that we could ask for.
Yeah.
Nerjadi, these ladies have done died and you still haven't told us squat about Hatsue. Where's she at? You promised us that you would tell us about her. What's going on?
Sorry, I'm stuck on the done died.
And that wasn't Nerjadi writing for me. I wrote that.
I know, because, I mean, they did. They don't die. But yeah, Nerjadi, to that point, we got two ladies that don't die. You promised us three. Where's the third? What did she do? Is she dead? Is she alive? What's going on? Where's our lady number three? She was just there hanging out.
She keeps leaving us in suspense.
Yeah, she keeps forgetting about the third.
Well, this is a perfect segue to the next part of the show.
What? Is she still alive?
Ooh, plot twist.
All right. Now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid. A woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drum roll, please. That's right. You guessed it. Hatsue Yamada.
Woo!
Hatsue!
Yeah.
Really stringing us along.
Yeah, to the very end, geez.
I was like, don't think I forgot.
She was about to show up in our credits. Oh, yeah, Hatsue is a member of the She Builds Podcast family. She edits our show or something. That's all that was missing. She's a proud member of the Gay Media Network. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you want to learn about her?
Yes, we do. Sorry. Come on.
All right, our caryatid is Hatsue. Hatsue Yamada was born in 1930. Just like her business partners, she came of age during World War II.
All right, I'm loving that she's the caryatid. I mean, I didn't see that coming at first, but I'm here for it.
Yes, agreed. We waited long enough, but I'm glad she still made it to the party.
That's right. It's fun. I like it.
Yes.
I know, right? When I saw she was alive and well, I immediately thought, oh, she will be the perfect caryatid.
A living legend.
Yep.
Now I see how you were going to try to make one episode about three ladies. Yeah. Sneaky, sneaky. I saw what you were trying to do there.
A sneaky pig.
Yeah. So her father encouraged her to attend Japan Women's College. She didn't really know what she wanted to study, but she took her dad's advice. She took and passed an exam to get into the college, and she picked the newly formed Life and Arts Department. It sounds like liberal arts to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seems like a good guess. I like that her dad encouraged her to go to school.
Agreed. We love a supportive parent.
The way she discovered her passion for design is a little bit emotional. It's post-war Japan, times are really hard. Hatsue didn't always get three meals a day. She might have gone to bed hungry. And due to this malnutrition, she often felt dizzy in class. What helped her stay awake, feel centered and present, was drawing. And she was like, I think I have a passion for design. I'm gonna pursue this and see where it leads.
Wow. That's so hard. And such a tough reality of that time in Japan. I'm really sad that she had to go through that, but I'm glad that drawing centered her and gave her the strength to continue on.
Oh, yeah. That sounds heartbreaking. It's interesting, you know, we always say things like the power of design, thinking about the end product, right? Like the design of something helping people, whether it's the design of a space and how it impacts. But in Hatsue's case, it's the actual act of designing and the power that it had for her to keep going. And I think that's something very poetic.
Yeah.
In what we do.
After graduating college in 1954, she worked at Asusa Design Office in Ginza for 3 years. There, she designed commercial office furniture.
Okay. Giving some Eileen Gray vibes, who also designed office furniture. Or even Florence Null.
Florence Null, yeah.
Yeah. Some big companies that she got to design for were Taisho Marine Insurance Co., Nihon Fire Insurance Co., and Japan Airlines.
Ooh.
Ooh, she was working on big stuff.
A solo project of hers I liked was a two-story house in Kamakura, which blends traditional Japanese architecture with modern practices, which we know these ladies are all about. The construction is traditional wood with sliding doors and tatami, but the interior is very open plan and modern.
Sounds lovely.
It really does.
Another really nice one is the Sumagoi residence. The way she used glass to accentuate the center and the hearth of the home is really nice.
Ooh, I really like the way it looks.
Well, just looking at least one of the pictures, it looks nice. There's the simplicity, the nod to nature. It's very Japanese. Is it a hotel now?
Possibly. And to the question you didn't ask me this time, we're definitely going to have pictures for this in the show notes.
Ooh.
Love it.
I will do my best to put it there so that listeners can enjoy it.
Beautiful.
When the design circle closed its doors, Hatsue went all in with writing and working in government organizations.
Ooh, government. Right up your alley, Nurjiti.
Yeah, you got to do your civic duty. If you can, get involved.
Yes. Good way to slip in this year's motto. Hashtag get involved in 2025.
That's right.
Remember that?
I do. We should do another shred about that soon. Anyway. Okay. So I mentioned that she designed, she got involved, she wrote. What am I missing?
Did she teach? Something tells me she was a professor.
Aren't they all?
Yeah.
Of course.
She had to be. That something tells you right, Jessica. She taught at Showa University in Tokyo.
Of course. Our ladies can't not be teaching.
Especially not these ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that all three of them were supporting each other to do so many different things. We always talk about how do they do all these things? And I think these ladies do it with each other's help.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if they were like, yeah, girl, come teach over here. Like, where I'm teaching at is great. Like, they need more teachers here. There's a spot. Or were they like, oh, Masaku, you know, I just got this interview to teach. What should I do? Give me tips. And then, or, you know, with their book publishing, they're like, girl, I have this book in mind. Who was your publisher? Because my book agent was this. And, you know, his fee was that or blah, blah, blah. You know, they had to, right? They had to talk and chit-chat about those things.
That's true. In 2003, she published The Science of Family Living Space, Thinking with the Mind-Body.
See, there you go. And she's published.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds like a book we should all be reading.
100%.
But seriously, again, how do they do it all? I mean, I think to your point, Jessica, maybe they're all relying on each other. It is always astounding.
It is.
I mean, it would only make sense, right? It would only make sense that they wouldn't do these in silos.
No. We have to think that it's supporting each other all the way. picking up slack as necessary, going all in when someone else couldn't, taking a break when needed, just like we do.
Yeah.
I mean,
true.
I have no concrete evidence of this, but I think the amount of work that they did and all the different ways they got engaged in their career speaks for itself.
Yeah. And it's inspiring. You know, I hope to be like them someday, to be like, I mean, we support each other, but like, I hope to be just as multi-hyphenated as them. Marketing person, podcaster, book writer, professor, but like also TV, right? Like, how do they do it by not watching TV? I mean, I get it. We're talking about like life circumstances. They went through wars, so I'm pretty sure TV wasn't top of mind for them. It just amazes me.
You can do it too.
Yeah, but you know, right now there's this new season.
Oh, okay.
Of like,
as far as we know, she might still be working at 95 years old in Kamakura on a citizen-led urban planning initiative. Part of the initiative is a book called The ABCs of the City of Kamakura.
Amazing. I love that she's still going. But thank you for sharing all three stories with us, Nerjiti, finally. But it's very fun to get to learn about all of them and their work together, as well as their individual work.
Agreed. It's a great way to start off this season. I'm excited for the season ahead.
Yes.
Woo-hoo! And to listen to more stories like this. So, yeah, even though it took two parts and we had to wait a week in between, I'm glad that we started the season with them.
Yeah. It was worth it.
It was worth it.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.